Ash, how you doing?
I'm all good.
Shall I tell you who we got on today's podcast?
Go ahead. Enlighten me.
Enlighten you. So this is Lee Dennison, who I haven't seen for years. Lee is the head of business development at White Light, which I suspect probably anyone that listens to this will know what White Light is. And actually, probably a lot of people will have heard of Lee as well. But I knew him way back when. Do you remember when we had Sam Hunter and Julia Whittle on and we talked about Miss Saigon? That was when I met Lee. He came on board as a member of the sound department because he's a noise boy. So I feel I'm just going to have to talk to him about how the heck did a noise boy become the head of business development at one of the really serious grown-up companies in our industry.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Let's get him on.
Have you got a pad? Have you made notes? Have you got lots of questions to ask?
Tons. Reams.
That pause was far too big.
It's the bandwidth, it's the Wi-Fi.
It's the Wi-Fi.
There wasn't a show pause, was there? No one heard that.
And then fade to the comedy jingle.
What has she let you do?
It's a lockdown beard, Lee.
Oh, my. I mean, I've seen some beard, Shaley, over the last six 12 weeks, but...
This is the best, right?
Wow.
I know. You're impressed.
Wow. I mean, so, it's like Father Christmas is rolled into Uncle Albert all at once. I mean, it's just, Tash, I've never met you before, but how have you let Uncle Albert and Father Christmas appear in the same place at the same... I mean, it's just unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, this is my backup career plan. You must have heard this. I am figuring that if our industry is never going to restart, at least at Christmas, I can hire myself out in the red suit. That's the plan.
I mean,
plus the extra pounds that are going on, it's all shaping up. Now, listen, I can't tell you how thrilled that we've got you to come on our little comedy podcast.
Oh, listen, I've been listening to some of the podcasts, and apologies for my all these people around here suddenly learning languages and learning to code and learning all this, and trying to juggle twin boys. We've got 5.5-year-old twin boys, Tash. So juggling them with homeschooling and then me working, Faye working, I haven't had a chance to learn anything. So I had a go on the podcast this last week. And it was lovely because I had Sam and Jules, which was lovely.
Yeah.
And then I was dipped into the John Osborne Aston, and I completely forgot I did Les Mis with John Osborne Aston years ago. So that was like, wow. And then I was just into Simon Gooding, and that was lovely as well. So you've got some lovely, lovely people on.
We have, and continue to. It's been very jolly. It's keeping us all amused in
it's nice, good fun, lockdown. And it's lovely. And well done to you both. And I love the yin and the yang. I love, you know, Shaley forgetting everything because he's quite facey. He's going that way, Tash. And then you just coming in with those killer questions. And I think it's brilliant.
It's definitely.
I spend half the time in awe. If anything, I'm just sat there going starstruck.
What of Shaley?
Definitely not of me.
Not quite.
She accused me of being an adult before we started this podcast. Never. I was absolutely horrified.
What was the backstory? Were you doing a show together during lockdown, before lockdown? Is that how it worked? Right. Got it.
We did the last show we're ever going to do together because there'll never be a theatre again, Lee.
Of course there will. Yeah. Just have cars in it watching a cinema. That's all, you know. But
it will be all in cars. That's true. So listen, look, we're already starting to ramble. And bless you,
sorry.
When I emailed you and said, Lee, would you mind coming on our little comedy podcast? You were very grown up and professional, and were saying, yes. So when should we arrange time just to have a little chat about the kind of things you want to talk about?
I didn't know. I was, you know.
And then you gave us topics, which was just divine. It means I don't even have to think about anything. Yeah.
Because it was just one that reminded me of having Sam on. And then when you had, because I didn't know Sam had done one, and there was a lovely, and then when Jules talking about bringing in a rather large dose of water, I suddenly thought quite better about what I'd actually done. I didn't know. And I thought, oh, gosh, should we talk about backup or what, you know, what?
Well, listen, we shall definitely talk about backup because that is on my list to talk about. But we just have to establish who you are clearly because since I've, well, you know, you've got this incredibly posh job title now,
tea and coffee.
But no, you're joking aside. You are the head of business development at White Light. You know, this is an important company in our industry.
No, I've been at White Light now. 2014, I moved into White Light, and loving it. You know, it, a great company, and you know, you don't get to be sort of 50 years old without basing your business model around people, and that's really what it is. The equipment's kind of almost secondary, really.
There's
people, you know, and we all know people buy people, and certainly in our world of, you know, theatre live events, it's about relationships.
Because you went in there, didn't you, to set up, to actually, because White Light, everyone knows, is a lighting hire company, but when you went in 2014, you went in to set up a whole new department, a whole new division, effectively.
Yeah, it was, you know, let's sort of take a mark on where we are in the world at the moment, but, you know, the world's been changing for many years, and companies have to diversify, and we all know as individuals we have to diversify our skill sets. You know, so I moved across. My background's audio, you know, and always has been audio, but also what I love doing is people, you know, and sort of speaking to people and being around people, and that's my world. The audio was, you know, kind of secondary, but I'd known White Light for years and been doing loads of work, and they were about to sort of move into this world of audio. So it was just a natural fit. You know, it was a really nice time. It worked well for me. It was a nice thing to do. You know, we started the ball rolling. We brought the right people in, the right equipment. We put it in, you know, framed it all in the right way. And, you know, it's grown ever since, really. But it's people. It's people, you know, and it's got some amazing people there. You know, John Simpson, who's chairman, you know, is a wonderful individual, and he was, you know, it was the first ever Rocky Horror Show toucher that, you know, a mate of his was doing it and couldn't afford the lights, and John bought them for him and, you know, hired them to him, and somebody else said the same thing, and before you knew it, that's how the rental business started. So
and they started up in that garage in Filmer Road, didn't they? You know, all those years ago, a garage in...
Well, that was, yeah, I mean, that was... while it's been everywhere, you know, sort of learning the history of where it's been up and down Chelsea, King's Road. It was obviously... Yeah. The very famous Filmer Road under the arches, which is where I knew it from my Lambda days of going down there and sort of, you know, seeing that. And now we're on 100,000 square feet of real estate in South Wimbledon, you know. Yeah. So it's grown, but it's great fun, and it's people, and that's fundamentally, especially at the moment, you know, it's all about people, and you know, making sure you're looking after your people, and they're looking after you. So,
I think that's why, you know, without wishing to blow smoke up your ass, that's actually one of the things you're incredibly good at. Because, you know, I know you as a noise boy back in the day. You know, a humhead. Let's do the joke. Why don't noise boys count to three? Because they'd have to lift something heavy. You know,
we would spill our coffee, and quite frankly,
so many jokes to be had. But one of the lovely things about you, from your background, is you've always been a people orientated person, right? I mean, you know, and that's why we're mates, because we just make each other laugh, don't we? That's your thing. You're a funny guy, and people like working with you.
I think, you know, life is so short, you know, and we've all seen that in, you know, through our personal lives and professional lives. You know, it's hard, and there's everybody sort of competing for the same marketplace, you know, the same work. So you've got to differentiate yourself, and you've got to be able to, you know, and this is, maybe we'll get into this a bit later, but, you know, talking to people and listening to people is such core soft skills of any job and any role. And that's something I think is really lacking at the moment. That's, you know, a lot of stuff I try and do with, you know, students coming into, certainly into this sector, is working on their soft skills. They don't seem to have it. You know, they can program something, or they can, you know, work a piece of technology out, but God, they can't talk to anyone. They can't listen. They can't engage. And that to me is fundamentally wrong, because, you know, even more so now, we need to be able to build our relationships and our trust. And you know, it is people by people. And I've just always been, you know, I'm not the shy one. I'm not the retiring one. I know when to speak and when to listen, but I'm very happy and much prefer dealing with people. And it's great. I've got people who do all the technical clever stuff and plug things in and make it all work. You know, my job is to get them in the position to do that.
Sure.
You know, and part of that is building relationships, but also, as we know, and Tash, I'm sure you're finding out in this industry, you know, the relationships you start building will be relationships that are part of your building blocks and your brand and your network, and you'll have those as you go through this career.
And is it cynical of me to think this is so lovely to hear coming from a noise boy? Because traditionally...
I never professed to be a noise boy. It was, I, you know, I love audio, and that whole adage of, you know, you never come out whistling the lights. You know, it is true. And, you know, the audio world is very underrepresented and very under regarded. You know, for years it was always the lighting designers and set designers who took the credits. But, you know, God, if you can't hear them singing, or if you can't you know, hear that there's a dog barking or wherever have you, then, you know, we forget that we use our ears so much.
It's the first thing to notice, isn't it? it's one of the first things you tend to notice. If something's a little bit...
Yeah, bad sound is always, you know, it doesn't matter if the light fails, projector fails, or, you know, but the scenery wobbles when it comes on.
Yeah.
You know, but if you can't hear something, you can't hear, you know, Jean Valjean doing his big number, or, you know, if you can't, that's the first thing. But people just expect it to be good in the first place. So there's always been that pressure. And I think it's just that, you know, that... It was just a different world. So, yeah, I mean, my background is audio, but guys that, you know, we have working for us are, you know, far more ahead of the game when it comes to the, you know, technology side of it. But it's still, you have to take them back and understand you do things in the right way. And we talk about gain structure and signal path and all these things that they forget about and fault find, which is the same in lighting video, you know, across the board. You're still teaching those skills. It's just that they're now programming off keyboards rather than off fader strips, etc. But no, you know, I've always, you know, the passion's been audio.
And when you say your passion's audio, because I know you're ex-Lambda, which Tash is ex-Lambda in point of fact, and I used to... Who was head of course for you when you were at Lambda? Is it Patrick?
It was Patrick Fraser. Yeah.
And Rog left some years ago, of course, didn't he, from the sound department, who must have...
Roger Norwood, he was a legend. I don't know if they ever did it with you, Tash, but Roger was teaching up until he left maybe in 2012-13 how to splice analog tape, you know, and it was analog tapes, two-track tape, and he was still teaching people how to splice because it was that age-old adjective. It was just a skill.
Yeah.
But you would take these great big Revoxes and he would, you know, put audio onto them, and you have tape running around microphone stands all around the, you know, the control room and back in to create this loop effect. Now we do that in Pro Tools or wherever have you, but it was a skill, and that was the key thing about it, because you could see the sound on a bit of tape. You could kind of see when it went past the head, and you could wind it backwards and forwards. But that was his thing. It was about splicing. If you could splice two bits of tape together and join them with a bit of sticky tape, you were a sound engineer, you know. Yeah. And you kind of go, yeah, fair enough, you know. And I know they were still sort of they were doing that as a bit of an homage to Roger for a few years afterwards, just a little afternoon session of splicing. But, you know, again, it's those skills that the synonymous sound of the Revox hitting a light stop, and you're doing this really silent play, Tash, in the old McCown Theatre at Lambda. It was before they moved in Hammersmith, but you're doing this really silent play, and, you know, with this big, you know, kind of Hamlet section, it went to quiet, and then suddenly you'd hear from the sound box this, which was the Revox stopping, you know, and it was like, well, yeah, that's all you can do, really. It was, you know, it was learning, you know, and it's a lovely thing, and it's good memories. And Lambda was a good place.
So how did you jump then? When you left Lambda, did you go straight into sound as your field, or because Lambda was always and still is a stage management course with a technical theatre training? But did you go straight into sound?
I went in wanting to be a stage manager. I did Chichester Festival Theatre. I was freelancing there for a couple of years. I was originally doing business studies. Hated it. Was passing everything, but hated it. Started doing sort of youth theatre in Chichester. It was fantastic. Ended up just doing some follow spotting in the main house, which I really enjoyed, and suddenly got the theatre bug. Changed courses at Chichester College, did a year in kind of, you know, drama, got a position at Lambda, and went in going, right, I want to be a stage manager. Came out going, I don't want to be a stage manager. But I could do, you know, lighting, sound and carpentry, you know, so it was kind of that jack of all.
Yeah.
Even did wardrobe. I mean, Mr. Gooding last week, or when I was listening to him, I did 6 weeks in wardrobe where Patrick Fraser said, you're obviously not made for wardrobe, but, but to this day, I can still load a sewing machine. And my other half got given a sewing machine by her grandmother who's passed away, but I'm still loading the bobbin up and loading a sewing machine up from years ago of using a sewing machine. So there were still skills you kind of remember. But I left Lambda, went to Salford Playhouse, spent 4 weeks there teching, and then ended up going doing a tour of China. And my first job was sound engineer for the Shakespeare play in Guangzhou, Beijing and Shanghai.
Wow.
And I was like, it's a nice way to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was cool. The first gig out was a tour of China, 12th night, which was great fun. And then came back, and then I did that old-fashioned thing, which, Tash, you wouldn't have heard of this. It's a bit old. There's a thing called rep theatre.
Lambda, you know, still teaches rep. I know what rep is.
No. I know, but it's...
Teach
it's,
it, but don't yeah, live
they,
it.
They just don't exist anymore. That's the problem. But I spent, you know, years sort of working around Salisbury, Nottingham, Manchester, Edinburgh, Tunbridge. I think when Faye and I finally settled where we are now, I'd counted 33 houses that kind of actually lived in over, you know, the past how many years? Because you were just doing six months, you know, and working your way around. So
yeah.
I did rep theatre for years and loved it, you know, great fun. And then sort of slowly sort of got drawn to the West End and showbiz and glamour and all that. And then they ended up sort of, you know, working for some amazing companies, doing some amazing stuff, and gradually sort of moved out of the theatre world into the corporate world. And then
and that West End kind of being sucked in, of course, that's where you and I met all those years ago. And was that Les Mis was your first biggie in town?
Yeah, I came down to Les Mis. So I did Manchester for 96 through back in 97.
And when you say did Les Mis, what's was that as a number two or
Fontaine, second cover, Javert?
Because you've got the legs for it.
And a Thenardier thrown in on a Wednesday matinee. I went in as number three. I went in with as number three, and I did that about 9 months there. And then I met, I moved across to Saigon.
Right.
Because there was a few people changing, moving to Saigon. So I ended up in Saigon with Lovie Beak Hattersley, who's number one. And then Brian Beasley came in as number two. He went off to do Mamma Mia. And then Beak and I finished Saigon off. So I ended up number two on Saigon for the last kind of 18 months of it. And we closed it. And we closed it in 2000.
Yeah.
Amazing show. You know, phenomenal show. Yeah. So, you know, it was great fun, which is where I met Sam Hunter as well, you know. And
now there's a story here that you tell me that you've got about Sam. Now, so our regular listener who's heard the other episode aside from you will know that Sam and Jew were on, and we did I'm kind of thinking we might have to get Sam and Jew and maybe your good self to come back and just do a Miss Saigon special, because there are so many stories. But there is a story that you've got about Sam, which I am personally keen to hear.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Sam was company stage manager, you know, the highest upon high and you know, godlike reverence, as she is still and will forever be. But I was in stage left of Drury Lane, Tasha. It was the radio room, rack room. It was downstage left, and you plop down some little stairs, and there was this crappy old room full of old dimmers and distro and electrics, and there was a radio rack in there, and that's where the sound team were based. To look after radio mics,
right.
You know, and checking actors and things like that. So there was also an electrician based there because there were so many scene changes. It was a massive show, and they were constantly having to fade up and down working lights and scene change lights because, you know, at the time there was like three consoles in the lighting box, all the moving lights and the fixed lights, and they'd run out of consoles. They put another console backstage, and it was this swing Alexis job just to fade up the appropriate lights at the right time for round the back of the stage. And it was all blues and things like that. But whenever there was scene change going on.
Because you could open all the side masking up to go straight into the wings for trucks to come in. So you had to keep dimming the work lights down.
So, you know, there was bits during the show where it was relatively quiet. So you're monitoring the radio racks and whatever. But after doing, you know, backstage for a few weeks, you get a little bored, you know, and I'd sort of done my rounds for that particular day. And I knew I had this kind of 5-10 minute slot. Well, there was nothing going on, and you know, there's a couple on stage and off you go type thing. So I remember watching out of the corner of my eye, the charge electrician had turned a couple of switches on the previous day as part of the scene change. And she'd nipped off, and you know, I don't know where she'd gone, but maybe stuck in the toilet or something. But it was coming up to that point, and I can't remember Ravy, whoever's DSMing that day, sort of, you know, called in, you know, standby for scene change lights, and the swing wasn't there. So being the nice chap that I was, I thought, I can do this. I know exactly what I'm doing here because I've seen it once, or so I thought. So instead of, you know, subtly fading up these blue scene change lights just to allow that, I managed to turn on the entire working light system on stage and off stage. So everything just turned on, and it was just like the stage was just turning to daylight during, you know, big number, mid-change, wherever have you. And I realised kind of what I'd done when I just heard Sam arriving, and I heard her arrive before she arrived. And she just came in, and it was just this stare, and Mark will know potentially this stare. And she just came in, and she said to me, "Sorry, thought you were the sound department. Are you lighting department?" And I went, "No, no." She went, "Then don't touch the in light, and that was it. And I was just like, and I was, you know, 20 something, and I'd just been absolutely given a dressing down by
totally schooled.
Because I quite rightly so, and I was just like, I didn't know what to do, but she just walked in and went, don't, you know, oh. So I didn't help anyone ever again, and that was basically it.
What were you thinking?
I was trying to be helpful, Mark. I was trying to be helpful. I thought, I've done this. Lighting can't be hard, can it? What's a bright down for dim? I mean, come on.
I love that. And as we know Sam so well, you know, that you would have just, that's seared into your memory for life now, isn't it? The day you were dressed down.
Right, I was scared of her in the nicest possible way, and lovely, you know, and we had some great laughs. But that was just one time. I was put quite quickly back into my place, and I was happy to stay in that box for the rest of the show.
Oh, that's very good. That's very good. I was going to do a really good segue into talking of staying in a box. Tell us about that excellent system at White Light. But I'm going to hold on that because I do want to talk about that.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to re-edit this now to make the order flow properly, aren't I? But I'm not going to at all.
That would be work, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. How hard can it be? I did want to ask you, and you mentioned it earlier, you're a trustee for Backup.
Yeah.
And I think this is a very good thing that we should talk about, especially in this day and age. I'd love to hear about Backup. Tell us all about it, and what is being a trustee on Backup? Because you've been doing it quite a long time now as well.
Yeah, Backup is a charity administered by the industry for the industry. Its remit is to help anyone who cannot work due to ill health or injury suffered, and that sort of extends to not only you, but also a partner or supporting a partner whilst you can't work, you know. And so we've got this sort of remit and obviously mandate with Charities Commission, but we sort of case by case, but we're generally, you know, there to help and support. But it sort of came out, I was sitting on Plaza Regional Board. God knows I got that. Matthew Griffiths long-armed me into that years ago. So I sat on Plaza Regional Board, got to sort of hang out with, you know, not heroes, but, you know, names in the industry you'd kind of, you know, heard about, read about, and, you know, sort of suddenly you're part of this, and, you know, you sort of give it a few months in case you're going to get found out, and you give it a few more months and still wasn't found out, and apparently people were listening to me. So I sort of carried on doing Plaza Regional Board, and then long before I sort of got involved with White Light, John Simpson approached me and said, look, we're setting up this charity. It was originally called Behind the Scenes, which was an American charity, and they were with Plaza, they were setting up the UK version. So John Simpson came up to me and said, look, you know, we're setting up this Behind the Scenes. Your name's been mentioned as somebody who would be good to get involved. And I was looking around going, well, who the hell said that, you know? And I walked into the first meeting, and I was in, you know, in awe, because John Simpson was there, Rick Fisher was there, amazing lighting designer who's become, you know, a good friend. The most amazing, lovely, and dearly missed Alan Jacoby, you know, who was there. Piers Shepherd, who, you know, technical director of the Olympics at the time, you know, and all these kind of
seriously, you know, the great and the good, isn't it? That, you know,
yeah, names. Yeah. And again, you sit there looking around the room, going, well, obviously, I'm just keeping the chair warm for somebody. Who am I? You know, it's, you know, 20 years in the business, haven't been found out. Keep going. I never got involved with the grants side. There's sort of four trustees who take the applications in and do the grants. I could get too emotional with that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, and we've seen, you know, so it's just with AJ, even in the last few months, we've seen lots of friends in the industry going and not, you know, people asking for money for their funeral, and that's kind of just really hard, you know. So I've never gotten involved that side of it. Where I've gone and done, I suppose what I enjoy doing is I've done the fundraising side. So we did, you know, big, you know, we got the National Theatre to give us for a one night only the cost load for Big Comedy Night, which we had Al Murray hosting for us. We do a big karting event every year called Kart Fest, where we went from 14 teams and we raised $7,000 6 years ago to 35 teams and raised over £25,000 last year. And that's grown.
Just say Kart Fest has become a little bit legendary in terms of the slight rivalries and fairly competitive nature of it.
It all got really, because I never get to drive, because I sort of run the day, and we do some really nice kind of sections in the day where we you know, kind of do the welcome bit, and it's always, you know, taking the mickey out of everyone. Then we do a bit in the middle, which is you know, sort of the, you know, the warm up laps and raffling off positions and things, and then we do a post racing session with the awards and stuff like that. But yeah, again, where it started, where most people would turn up for a bit of a giggle. You know, by year two or three, people are turning up with their own helmets, you know, and racing and like that. And you suddenly go, wow, there's this really suppressed nature of aggression. And then we got one team who had entered their team of clients, and we subsequently found out their clients were all karting champions that they'd nicked from the local track at year one. So they got.
Is there a such thing? There's a pool of karting.
Yeah. So.
Did you say champions? Yeah,
we found out one of them was the British karting champion. You know, which is what Lewis Hamilton was years ago. He was a karting champion, but yeah. You know. So we quickly nobbled them next year around. So we come up with these wonderful ways of, you know, you can't win because we play Joker cards and everyone gets to take laps off you, or and we turn the screens off half an hour before the end so nobody can actually see what position they're in. So we do all this stuff because, you know, it's not about the winning, it's about the, you know, the taking part. But it got really kind of full on.
Yes, I can imagine. Knowing a couple of people that were involved, I think it would.
Yeah, and then we tried to sort of make, you know, so that was like, you know, the racing's 2 till 5. It's 3 hours of racing. But then afterwards, you know, we do sort of, you know, we do artists and comedians and barbecues, and we try and encourage the industry to come down. And, you know, we were actually getting some really good, everyone kind of saw it as a really nice networking day.
Yeah.
Because you could bring clients down to it. You could have people catching up with people. You know, there were manufacturers down there sponsoring bits, and they were catching up with clients. And actually also, you know, you'd have the, and I'm going to, you know, I say it, but you'd have the likes of, you know, Brit Row and Wigwam turning up, or CT and, you know, Anna Valley or wherever have you. And actually they'd just leave everything at the door. And it was a charity day, and they'd all get involved, and they kept coming back. You know, we went from say 14 teams to 35 teams, and we were sold out within about a week. Last year, and this year we were going to, it's all themed. Last year was Independence Day, so we, you know, everybody was rednecks and God knows what. And we had a Trumpy lookalike doing a nice big welcoming piece. And the previous year we did Wimbledon, and this year was going to be Olympics, and we were going to do Roadie Olympics as well. So we were going to have Roadie Olympics running.
That sounds great.
Karting, and we were going to do, you know, the 20-meter mic cable coil, and, you know, the flight case challenge, and you know, the ball of gaffer tape, you know, it's all that stuff. And then obviously just, we can't. So we 2021, that's going to be a year. We're going to make a real effort to bring everyone together, because it got to be in the one event of the year. And, you know, there are award ceremonies in our industry, which I just bore the proverbial out of me, because it's, you know, it's everyone at the bar. Nobody gives a monkeys about the awards, because it's the same awards that just go around the tables every year. And whichever table's sponsored the most is closest to the front gets the award type thing. And what we kind of found with Kartfest was actually it was embraced by the industry, because it was for them.
And, so and it talks to the inherent kind of the thing that I think you know, we all love about our industry, is that when you just boil it down, it is family, and it's a family day out in that respect, isn't it?
It was an amazing day out, and we did it. I tried to do a piece with all the drama schools. I sort of sent out this kind of piece to, you know, the Centrals and Radars and Lambdas, and there were some schools that came back to me, and some disappointingly that didn't come back to me, who remained very close to some of us on this call. Which, you know, I have chastised them for, but we offered, you know, sort of, you know, days out for, you know, come along, come and work with the likes of Autograph or Creative Technology, come and, you know, put the PA out, put the video screens up, come and run some cameras, and also I'll intro you to the industry.
Yeah.
And we bring, you know, we used to get 3 or 4 people in, and I'd bring them up onto stage right at the start, and I say, right, this is James, or this is Sarah, or whoever. Mm-hmm. This is the industry. Their challenge is they've got to get 10 business cards by the end of the day. And I've told them, if somebody wasn't talked to them, you find out which team they are, and they're getting 10 laps taken off them. And it was great, because everyone was relaxed. So you'd find these students were suddenly starting their networking process there, and then they were building up a reputation, not only with meeting people, but suddenly, you know, the likes of Autograph were seeing them and going, hey, you know, and they were getting work from Autograph or CT or Piers Shepherd, or, you know, and you kind of go, it was a really nice way of just bringing people slowly into a safe environment. All right, we had a little bit of fun with them, but they got to meet people and they got to do stuff, which was really cool, because it just went on.
you're a big champion of that, aren't you? Of the whole networking and bringing the next generation through.
Not to you, mate. I got helped when I was starting on with this, and Tash, you are now. Just unfortunately, you picked the wrong one. But you know, how many people out there and you hooked on to Shady? But no, it's
hard but fair. Hard but fair.
The brutal truth, isn't it, Jess?
Brutal truth. Yeah.
There's a time and a place to ask a question, obviously. You know, you don't ask it.
And no question is a dumb question, which Will Scarnell will all live by.
It just might not be right asked at the right time. And I think that's a good thing to, you know, have. But if somebody wants to give you an answer, then they're not really worth asking, you know. And I've sort of lived by that. And I've all, you know, I've got helped when I was, you know, sort of starting out and going through this, you know, and building. I do this piece when we talk to you about brand, you know, building your own brand, because I protect my brand, which is my name and the company I work for, and that's a brand I work hard for. You know, now they're building their brand, and it's really important, because that's all you've got in this industry is people buy you. They don't buy because you can plug a light in or a, you know, sound desk up. They buy you because they know you can do that and they trust you to get on and do with it. So building a brand is really important. So we do this piece with, you know, students about getting into the industry and you know, no, like you say, no question is a bad question, but no networking is bad networking, you know, because you're going to be meeting people you're going to grow through your career with, and whether they're your peers or colleagues or, you know, the next generation above you. But it's really, really important to sort of do that.
And of course, it is interesting as well, though, isn't it? We all are terrible at networking because no one actually likes it, but it becomes a skill that we have to figure out in order to build those meaningful relationships with people that aren't just superficial relationships that go a bit deeper, that so that we can legitimately say family without it being slightly cheesy. I think, you know,
I think it's really important, and it annoys me a little bit. And Tash, you can defend your generation on this, but we do this piece where we go into the drama schools, and it's all set up. We do this 2-hour kind of, you know, how to get work in the industry piece, and it's a friend of mine, colleague of mine, and we've been doing it for years, going around the drama schools, and we changed the delivery over a few years because we could see where it worked and didn't work. And originally it was just about production meetings and like this 5-minute piece on CVs. And now it's, you know, an hour and 55 on CVs and network and brand and 5 minutes on production meetings. But we do this bit now where every student knows we're coming in to the classroom that day, because every student now has got an email address. They've all got, you know, student-based Outlook, you know, so it sits in their diary. And I've seen it every single time. It says, right, you know, coming in from White Light, Lee Dennison and you know, a colleague of mine. So they've got it there. So we do this piece, and it's really, and I find it fascinating. We sort of walk in and we all say to the lecturers, look, fine, we've got this. And, you know, all the chairs are laid out in theatre. So I said, no, come on, just sit around. Come on, this is really informal. And I said, right, just before we start, and I'll pick on you on this one, Tash. I go, right, just before we start, tell me about me. And you just see this look. I said, fine, sorry. Tell me about Stuart. Okay, tell me about White Light. And you occasionally get a hand up, goes, oh, you hire lights. And you go, right, okay, so all of you knew we were coming in today, potential employers, from a company that's a potential employer. And not one of you has bothered to even... And I said, it's not about me. It's not about blowing smoke up my proverbial. I've got a job. I can walk away from this. But in 4 years of doing this, I can probably count on one hand, someone's put their hand up and go, yeah, Stuart Crane, you were, you know, done my warehouse, or, you know, X Autograph. Yeah. And I go, brilliant. It's not about blowing smoke. It's just about saying you bothered to, you know, get on Google or go on LinkedIn or just do some basic research.
Yeah. It's so easy now, isn't it? That's what Google is our friend. You type in someone's name and up comes their LinkedIn, their Facebook. Yeah. I do a version of that the other way around, where I go in and teach people professional presentation skills. And
you go in and go, who am I? Because I haven't got a bloody
clue. I haven't got a clue. So I keep forgetting. It's the beard. I'm grey and old.
Santa's brother.
I go in the other way round and say, and ask for a list of names of who's going to be there student-wise, and then I do a very mean thing and I Facebook search them all, and then embed into my PowerPoint presentation their worst throwing up photos at the various freshers parties they were at. It's a great gag.
You and I did that, actually. We did that on the last time on the Guildhall students, and we got four of them, and we did the Facebook, we found the pictures, and we found out that one of them could speak, you know, Latin or something weird like that. And they were just suddenly, because we said, well, you don't know about us, hang on, we'll tell you. And they were like, And you kind of go,
how do you know?
Yeah. And I go, you know, and it's like, close your Facebook down. I don't want to see kebab on heads when I'm looking for you. I want to see nice, pretty lighting design or sound design, a picture of a mixer or something.
But it's not something we're taught, though, is it really? It's not like in drama school, you aren't taught about internet footprints. And instead, you're taught to get your name out. But what they don't teach you is the security settings. And the fact that Mark essentially employed me based on my Mandy network, he had it in front of him. When he was interviewing me and frankly said it, like he didn't, it wasn't a secret at all. He literally said, I'm going to get this up right here and now. But I was unprepared for that. Perhaps, you know, maybe I would have edited a few things had I known that. I got the job. It's fine. But do you know what I mean? Like there isn't it's not implemented in our brains to go, we're going to have our social media seen. I think there was an interesting conversation Mark and I had whilst on tour where he did a year experimenting, trying to try out social media. I mean, you can speak for yourself on this one, but it was a really interesting opinion on it simply because I'm from the generation where Instagram and likes and retweets and what is actually equates to you as a person. Somebody is employed based of how many followers they have. So, I mean, it's Black Mirror, essentially. The episodes of Black Mirror is how it comes down to, like, my personality doesn't matter. What actually matters is that photo that's edited, that's been put in that light. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it's very different.
I think you could creepily see it going that way. But I think at its most basic level, I think, Lee, as you talk about brand, which, you know, brand is only the 21st century's version of what we used to call reputation, and you're only as good as your last job.
Yeah.
But now we get to curate our reputations, and that's actually a slightly more, you have to work that a little bit, don't you?
I think it is. And I think
tweak your bio.
You do, And you have to, you know, absolutely, you know, people, you know, looking at you for your likes or what you're, you know, you're retweeting or you know, resharing. But I get a stickler for this, you know, absolutely kebab on head at the weekend, brilliant. You know, have your email, which is, you know, ilovebigfish.com, whatever, brilliant. But that's one side of you. You know, your work email is mark.shale@mac.com, you know, whatever it is, and here's my LinkedIn profile, here's my Instagram profile. Here you can coexist in two worlds. That is not a problem. That's never been my problem.
Which is why I'm always very, very, you know, sensibly, I make sure that my OnlyFans foot fetish site is never put on public display. It's, you know, I can happily hold those two things simultaneously. Now, look, I've got to ask you then, I think this is so interesting, you talking about brand and reputation, because your brand has got very subtly altered into being a rather good frontman host for lots of online virtual seminars and rather lovely bits of you presenting stuff. And you've become this rather lovely host in this excellent bit of technology called Smart Stage, which White Light do. Tell us all about that, because I just think it's brilliant, and everyone needs to go and have a look at it because it's just a stunning bit of tech.
Smart Stage is it's a very clever bit of kit that we've been working on for about 3 years now. It started off as this LED environment for the Winter Olympics. And it was to give your ex-skier, who is now trained as a TV presenter, the space to come into and start talking about skiers. And it was all this beautiful content wrapped around them. And suddenly the skier would pop out in augmented reality. And because the presenter was now trained presenter but ex-skier, they could talk about skiing proficiently because they knew how skiers looked and how they held themselves. But they knew where the camera was because they were trained presenters. So it became this really cool analysis tool, and the graphics look fantastic, and because it was
it's a little difficult to describe, isn't it? I figured over a podcast it's something we have to get people to just go and look on the White Light site for, because it's
green screen, but the content is actually there.
Yes,
green screen, it means that there is no content. You've got to pretend, you know, and you see all the green screen actors on Hollywood, they pretend that there's a dragon about to jump them, or they're about to jump off this, or whatever have you. And what Smart Stage gives you is the content is actually there on the walls around you, because it's LED. So you don't have to be a presenter. You don't have to be a trained actor. You can walk on and suddenly go, oh, I'm standing on a bridge, or I'm in the middle of a desert, or I'm on the moon, or wherever have you, because you can see all the content.
And it's so clever, because I've looked at the videos on it and looked at you presenting, and I've looked at the kind of the product in itself, and I've seen it in reality down in Wimbledon. And you kind of go, that's clever, because it's like it's real and it's virtual, and it's a TV studio, and it's augmented reality, and it's all this one thing mulched into one.
And anyone can use it.
Yeah.
It's not trained.
Yeah.
You don't need to be a trained presenter. And that's the lovely thing about it. And because we've been doing it for 3 years now and work with some amazing people and companies. And, you know, there's Smart Stages out now globally. Mm. You know, we're not sort of doing this bandwagon thing, which obviously a lot of people react into the current situation. This is a tried and tested technology. And
yes, that is the fascinating thing about it, isn't it? It's a mature technology that is absolutely, its time has come in our strange times in which we live, because you can be holding all sorts of presentations and conferences and seminars and in this amazing virtual augmented environment.
With the world we're in now, and again, I'm a bit of an old school on this. I describe it as it's analog and digital coming together.
Right.
And what we mustn't do, whilst we all sit on these Zoom calls on a daily basis, which we do now, you know, it's great that we can see each other, but we miss that. We really want, you know, that more engagement. We want real people type thing. Sure. And there's lots of kind of videos out there about, you know, pop star avatars in videos. And it's great, but it's an avatar. It's, you know, what we've done with Smart Stage is create a digital background so it can be wherever you want and it can be as big as you want, but the person in the middle is real.
Yeah.
It's a real person talking to you or talking to other people within that. Nobody's wearing headsets, so it's, you know, everybody's engaging together. It's collaborative. You're all sharing the same experience rather than everyone's taking the headsets off going, well, I saw the blue thing. I didn't see a blue thing. I saw, you know, it's a really nice big space, you know, that everybody can be part of. And it is. I, you know, when I'm doing the hosting stuff that you've seen, I'm the analog. I'm the old school. I'm the bit that anchors it in that case because I'm real. Whereas, the, you know, the background's digital. And I think we've got to be really careful that as we come out of the world we're in, that we have to take the really good bits that we've learnt in the last 12, 14 weeks. You know, we don't have to get everybody on a plane to come and do a conference anymore. Yeah. You know, we can do some really nice ways of bringing people into that space differently that still feel real engaging. But at the same time, we need to get people back in front of each other, and whether that's networking, selling, listening, engaging, teaching, you know, we've got to find that hybrid mix. So everything was virtual. Everything on LinkedIn for the first 3 weeks was, right, we're going to do virtual conferences, virtual. And we were like, really went, we big on going, no, let's call it digital, not virtual.
Yep.
Digital, and then digital gives you that spider's web out of that. But that hybrid model of analog and digital cohabiting together, which it can do. And, you know, I think I did a post recently on LinkedIn. I was just answering somebody back who was posting about, oh, it's, you know, it's not going to take off. You know, we need to go back. And I sort of said, well, listen, if you watch the Blue Planet, BBC Blue Planet, you could watch Blue Planet on its own and it's amazing. It's beautiful content. It's shot amazing. You add David Attenborough to that and you've suddenly got everything.
Yeah.
If you had David Attenborough on his own, you could listen to David Attenborough for a long time. Yeah. But you add the Blue Planet content to David Attenborough and suddenly the marriage is there. And that's kind of what hybrid should be about. Yeah. It should be the best that you can bring together. And, you know, people only moan about this digital world because of the content. So, well, then build better content or build more engaging. Don't, you know, don't build stuff for the sake of it, having things whizzing around and flying around if it's not relevant.
Sure.
You know, build content that is relevant, that people actually want to engage with and look and take on board. But then you've got to have a host or a narrator or a facilitator, whatever it is, actor, singer, they've got to engage with that content and then take it to the next level. And that's the beauty of what we're finding is how that goes together. Because we're all, we all consume content differently now, don't we? We're not, you know, nobody can stand and watch. I mean, theatre's going to be hard for going and sitting down for an hour and a half watching the same thing because we constantly swipe around channels at the moment and you've got a Zoom call open, but you've got an email. And so we all engage contently differently. Yeah. So we've got to see how, you know, how do we do things in the future?
Well, I have to say, I think it's an amazing bit of kit. I liked it when I saw it actually at White Light. And as I started to research the product online, just for my own curiosity, really, I thought this is so interesting. And then, of course, now that you've become the go-to host for all things in this environment, well, who knew this was your new secondary career? I mean, I see a bright TV career ahead for you, young man.
It was years ago. I used to be accused of a Dale Winton lookalike, which
I've never thought.
I think maybe when there were a few more pounds on me, and
yes, I could see that. I'd never put that together.
Right, thank you, mate.
Yes,
thank you, mate. Yeah.
No, well, I got told I look like Uncle Albert, so we're going to go with Dale Winton. You're probably doing better out.
Yeah,
I think you're both are evens now.
Yeah. Don't worry, Tash. I'm saving it for you. Don't worry. Just because you're a lady doesn't mean you get away from us.
Okay.
Listen, I'm just thrilled we can hear equality in action. Equality in action is being rude to everyone simultaneously. You know, that's fair, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just thrilled we can hear Tash this week because usually we can't hear her because the microphone's awful. So this week, brand new mic. And I'm hoping this recording is going to be great, because given your audio background, I'm hoping you're sitting there. I can see a virtual background of palm trees and waves, but I'm assuming you're on some high-tech, very clever, smart microphone at your end that's going to make the quality of this sound recording superb this week.
And as long as you're assuming that, then that's fine.
Brilliant.
I'm in my quiet office. Children are asleep. Faye's downstairs with a glass of wine.
I was just going to ask how you haven't pulled your hair out having two kids during lockdown.
Twin boys. I won't say it's been easy, but, you know, we've kind of got used to it over the last 5.5 years. We know how to, you know, they're boys. You've got to treat them like dogs. You've got to run them twice a day and feed them. And that's kind of what it boils down to, really. So they're great fun. We're having, again, there's all the positives that we've come out of this from, which is, you know, family and work-life balance.
Getting to spend time with them, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it's what, you know, Simon was saying on the podcast, you know, his one is, you know, it's readdressing that work-life balance, and we've got to, because, it can work and you can do things and you don't need to be everywhere at the same time. Mm. I think that's fundamentally, we've all got to sort of stand up for that and take that back when we return, because we will, you know, we will return. It will just be different, you know, it will be different. And we did this piece a couple of weeks ago now, Shady, where we were talking to, we did to Rose Bruford, but we did one for apprentices as well. But, you know, everybody's got to adapt. It's a different time and place, but it's also a really exciting time for the next generation, because they get to carve out what, you know, the live events industry looks like as we move forwards. You know, we're here to support and help deliver, but it's really exciting for that next generation to seize the moment and the opportunity.
Sure.
Mark, take note of the glass half full. Okay, take notes, please. Mr. Pessimistic over there. Doom and gloom he is.
My other half's like that, and that's why we work so well off each other, is that, you know, yin and yang, haven't you?
And to be honest, I think there's a lot of yin and yang conversations in our industry at the moment, as we all desperately try and find some lights at the end of the tunnel, I think, isn't it?
That's exactly. Yeah. Okay. It will come, though. It will come.
I love your optimism, and I love the fact that you are able to give up an hour of your very valuable time, especially as the missus is downstairs drinking wine without you. So, listen, and it's so lovely to see you, because it's been ages. We bumped into each other, didn't we? But I haven't seen you properly for ages.
Yeah, it's always lovely to see your better half, quite frankly, more than you.
Yes, because my better half does a lot of work at White Light, so she's down there much more. She's down, well, none of you are down there very much at the moment. Are you all working from home?
No, there's people in. I've been in pretty much all the way through. I sort of do 2 days in the office, 3 days from home, just because obviously the kids are at home, so we're balancing that all up.
Yeah.
But no, we've had teams in when needed, and you know, right people in. So yeah, and we're slowly sort of bringing people back.
Great.
You know, over the next few weeks and months.
Brilliant.
But yeah.
All good stuff.
It's so good of you to take the time, and really appreciate it.
Listen, I feel very honoured to be even asked to just, you know, I think it's a lovely podcast. I think you've got a really nice balance there. Tash, again, I can only apologise. You picked the wrong... Sorry about that.
The wrong old fart to hang out with.
Wrong mentor. I mean, really, there's so many...
How dare you call me a mentor? How dare you?
I know, maybe I shouldn't. I get the feeling, though, he's gonna find some cool people for you to hang out with and talk to. And again, make sure you find out who they are, do your networking. LinkedIn.
We've introduced you to some nice people, haven't we, over the last few weeks? And
you met some lovely
people. We've had some lovely people, yeah. So hopefully that will continue. Lee, thank you so much. That's really lovely.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure. Lovely to meet you, Tash. Shirley.
Lovely to meet you also.
Great to see you, mate. Love to Mrs. Really? And see you on the other side.
Ciao.